Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeti, I want you to bleep out what I just did just to like tease the audience, but I like the idea that I just said exactly what's happening on Tuesday and my dad's trying to smile it off like I didn't just ruin it.
You know, I mean, if you want to ruin it, go ahead. I wasn't going to, but you know.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Dad, I think I heard that you went to the saddest movie premiere in movie history.
Well, it was the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, the FLIFF, which is a bad acronym, F-L-I-F-F, the FLIFF.
Yeah.
I saw the world premiere of The Senior, the movie we talked about last week, starring Michael Chiklis, where we had on the 59-year-old college football linebacker, Mike Flint, whose life is about this movie and vice versa. And so I saw it. It was a little sad in that, you know, it's not a Hollywood premiere, but it is what it is.
Explain the being invited to a premiere. Was there a red carpet? Were there photos taken? I love the idea of a photo of you on a red carpet.
There was a red carpet. There were photos being taken. I don't play that game, so I did not have any photos taken of me on a red carpet.
Would you say, no, not for me, please?
You had to go to a certain thing and stand up in front of one of these backgrounds with a film festival logo on it. And I just don't do that. You know, I was schmoozing. I talked to a bunch of former Dolphins who were there. OJ McDuffie, my new best friend ever since he had me on his Fish Tank Dolphins podcast.
Did you see, were there any sad moments like in the line for popcorn with celebrities?
Actually, Chip Namias and I were in the line for popcorn, actually. And OJ McDuffie was too. And he was behind the line, but we didn't invite him up to join us, and he didn't ask. So
more like OJ McButtery, right? He buttered the shit out of that popcorn.
I never noticed because he was behind me in the line. But bumped into Jeff Cross, bumped into Mark Higgs, two old names that only old Dolphin fans would know.
You didn't bump into any of these people.
That's true. I didn't. But let me tell you a little bit about the movie. First of all, it finds a place for one of my favorite early 70s song, Rubber Band Man by the Spinners, which I just love.
I love how you went and saw a movie, so you think it's noteworthy to tell everyone about the movie. Just like we got it, didn't we? It's about the guy's life that we talked to last week. Great right. episode, by the way.
Right. Thank you.
Great interview.
Yeah, you didn't listen to it, but
I was traveling last week. Normally, yeah, I would have listened to it.
Right. You never listened to our podcast.
You had a long flight home. Look, you had time to listen in to me and Andrew recording ourselves talking about the Beatles song, but
I did chime in on that.
Did you have time to listen to the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody?
Not this week's episode. Yeah,
okay. Christopher, you admitted to me that you never listen to this podcast because you think you're involved in it, you're producing it, whatever. You never actually listen to it.
I'm generally the final ears that hear it before it goes out. Yeti puts it all together and I listen to it and I make some notes and I send it off I hear it every single week, which is why, no, I'm not a narcissist. So I don't go back. I am subscribed to it because I want to help our numbers. Like, I am a subscriber of our podcast.
And you just don't listen.
Do you click download?
I every few weeks I will unsubscribe and resubscribe, sometimes listen to the episode, but I don't listen four times once it's been out like you every week.
Okay. I think Yeti and I agree. We like to listen to it once it comes out.
It's a Greg thing. You guys are narcissists.
Okay.
So Greg, I could pile on Chris right here, but that would be disingenuous because it's not uncommon for, like, I know he doesn't go back and listen through Levitard episodes unless there was something that he needed to pick out for something for the future. That's just too much.
I do listen if I think I did something really funny. Like, if I get a lot of comments on something, hey, this
now
joke...
Now he's the narcissist.
This joke, like, I had a good joke about Dan and chips, flavored chips, this past week. on the Levitard show. So I did go back and I was like, let me hear how that joke sounded. So like I will go back and find things, but I'm not just listening to every single thing of content that I'm a part of.
Okay. Before we go on, and we have an interesting guest here who I want to talk about, Vivek Jayaram.
Yeah, we got Vivek, and if we got to hold his feet to the fire, because if people find out that we got this guy and we don't hold his feet to the fire, people are going to not be happy with us.
Okay, this is not the crackpot right-wing politician with the same first name. It's so a different guy.
Who are we talking to?
Okay, this guy is Vivek Jayaram, who's an adjunct professor of law at the University of Miami. And he has a law course called Intellectual Property Through the Lens of Taylor Swift. So all my Swifties out there got to listen to this podcast because it's very interesting. But before
so
we get to that.
So we're just pandering to the Taylor Swift name at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, nice. There's no question about that. Nice. We want all the Swifties. We want Kansas City Chiefs fans. We want you all because of this. But one more quick comment on this movie. It's corny as hell and it's predictable as hell. And those sound like negative things, but in this case, they're not. Look, a lot of the great tearjerker kind of movies, right? Rudy, Field of Dreams, the sports genre tends to encourage movies like this that are predictable. You sort of know the story or feel like you do before you even see it, but it doesn't mean that you don't get a lot out of it. I teared up a couple of times, and the people in the packed theater, granted, a lot of them probably were patrons of the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, but people really loved it. It was a standing ovation at the end. It was a well-done movie. It's not going to win an Oscar, but I think it's going to do pretty well for whoever the hell is making money from it. That kind of thing. Okay? Christopher is literally shaking his head.
Man, just this last 2 minutes, it's like, I went to a preview, so I need to give my thoughts on it, and it's a movie. It has emotions. It's like, I don't know what you're even talking about.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'm talking about is exactly what I said. I'm going to let what I said stand on its own.
Okay.
Okay. Great.
Shall we get to Vivek?
Yes.
Well,
let's go.
No, I want to talk about the Miami Hurricanes.
Oh, but Christ.
No, he wants to do that now. Okay.
We want to talk about that on the end. After Vivek, we can do that.
Yes. We need a palate cleanser after he petered out on talking about the Michael Flynn movie, about the senior.
Okay. It was a good analysis by me. I was the only one who was there. I'm the only one in our audience who cares.
Who cares?
We should be happy that he went to see a movie, Chris.
You are the only one who cares. That is true.
I mean, you haven't been to a movie since Don't Look Up, and before that, it was Rocket Man, and before that, it was like Voting Day or Election Day.
I saw a movie this week too, but I don't think it's like noteworthy to bring up on the podcast.
Okay, because it's probably not a movie that was a central character in our podcast the previous week. That's why. Okay. See, that's why. But to Yeti's point, this experience reminded me why I don't like going to movies. Okay, we were behind us. There was constant activity behind us. There was a woman in a dark theater with like a little handheld flashlight that she kept using. It was totally annoying. I'd much rather be in my house listening to this movie than surrounded by people I don't know. Totally annoying experience. Great movie, though.
But that doesn't absolve you from not watching movies altogether. Because, like you said, you could watch them in your house, but you never do.
Yeah.
That's something I do want to explore, whether now or later.
Okay. The short answer is, I think I have a version of adult ADD. Like, I find it very difficult to sit still and do anything for 2 hours.
Yeah, you walk around your house, even when you're watching a Dolphins game. Like, you're in the kitchen, you're in the garage. Like, you're never just sitting on the couch watching a game.
I don't binge watch. You know, I'm not the kind of guy who can spend an entire afternoon on a couch watching five, you know, episodes of Black is the New Orange, one after another. Rat-a-tat-tat.
Black,
you know,
is the New Orange. Okay.
I mean, I'm just using that as an example because it's the only thing I could think of that people used to binge watch.
Well, it was Orange is the New Black.
Yes,
well,
Orange whatever. Is the New Black. Yep.
Okay. Okay. You got my point, though. All right, let's get to Vivek, huh? Let's
now he wants to go.
All right, well, let's get started. We're happy to be joined on the podcast today by Vivek Jayaram. Jayaram, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you're good.
Christopher's shaking his head.
I'm only laughing because before the interview, you like did a whole thing and you nailed it there. And then you just,
I know.
Nailed it.
Listen, this is how we roll around here.
Okay, you could be named John Smith, and I would find a way to mispronounce it. Trust me. No, don't take it personally. Now, this guy, he's a University of Miami adjunct professor of law, and he knows how to market a law class, because this guy, and we're going to find out why, attached the name Taylor Swift to the course he's teaching, which I think is absolute brilliance, as we have seen in the NFL this season with Taylor Swift dating Travis Kelce, the tight end. Anything associated with her name is wonderful.
So what you're saying, Dad, is he's doing a class teaching people how to be Taylor Swift. That is a remarkable.
Yeah, that's what I assume. So you have another a bunch of Taylor Swift wannabes in your class, right?
We've got a few fans. A lot of law students and a few Swifties, too.
Okay. Now, the course is called Intellectual Property Law Through the Lens of Taylor Swift. I think I know the background of this course and why it's called that, but you explain why you decided to teach a course in law, which I assume is under the broad umbrella of entertainment law, having to do with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, no, sure. Well, first, Chris, Greg, thanks for having me on the pod. It's great to be here. So about a year ago, I was, I think, listening to some other podcast, and I think they just announced that Midnights was going to be released. And so there was some early chatter about that record. And just like the week before I was listening to this podcast, I had read about the trademark dispute between Evermore, the theme park, and Taylor Swift. Evermore had sued her for trademark infringement. And she turned around with the help of some Swifties and sued them for copyright infringement. And so I just finished reading that. And then, you know, the news, the album came out. And also fresh news right around then was her decision to re-record all of her albums, which she's, you know, calling Taylor's version, which is a clever sort of copyright and contract play. So I'm thinking about all these things. And I just mentioned to a buddy of mine just off the cuff, I was like, yeah, you know, I bet Swifties know more about IP law than a lot of lawyers do, right? And pretty quickly, I think in the couple of days that, you know, after that, Greg Levy, who's the associate dean at University of Miami Law School, and who kind of brought me on to teach a bunch of IP stuff about 8 years ago at the school, and I've been teaching since then. I was chatting with him, and I said, "Listen, I've got a kind of out of the box idea, but I think all I've brought to the school have really been these kinds of off the wall ideas. So here's another one for you." And he was very receptive of it because, you know, I think, Greg and Chris, like, since I've started teaching, I've really tried to bring to the classroom for the students the opportunity to learn these very sort of conceptual doctrinal things, right? Like copyright, trademark, trade secrets, patents, these things which tend to be, you know, could be somewhat complex or academic in a law school setting or whatever you may say, but showing them how those things apply to hyper relevant, hyper contemporary circumstances that they are likely to encounter in the next couple of years when they leave Coral Gables and come out into the world and start practicing law. And so, you know, I've taught courses on AI and copyright. I've taught courses on law firm innovation, and I've taught a whole bunch of classes on how to handle a copyright or trademark case in sort of today's contemporary sort of business environment. So that's just a little bit about the background, how I got there.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea. I happen to be married to an attorney, and I can tell you that when she starts speaking legalese to me, it's right over my head. But when she puts everything in layman's terms, as she tries to do when speaking to a jury, it's digestible. It's much better, you know, on the ear. Yeah. So how does Taylor Swift get away with this? How does she essentially re-record all her material and then claim ownership to it when someone else has bought the rights to that material? Am I putting that correctly? Is that a dumb question?
No, it's actually it's a very good question. And it's really one that's not so easy to understand. So I can unpack it just a little bit. So every song that you hear, original song that you hear, right? There is copyright. And for music copyright, there's really like what I guess the best way to say it is, there's two parts to it. Okay. There's one part, which is the musical composition. So like the song, the melody, you know, and of course there's the lyrics and things too. And then there's another side, which is the sound recording. So if we take, the song, say Style by Taylor Swift, right? That song will have two parts to the copyright, right? Before she recorded it. One is the musical composition, and that musical composition will be owned by Taylor Swift because, you know, like a Bob Dylan, like an Elliott Smith, somebody like a Phoebe Bridgers, she writes her own songs, right? Right. So she owns that copyright. And then the sound recording for, I used, you know, Style, so that would have been on the 1989 record. That label, right, will own the sound recording. And that is typical for the label to own the sound recording. And so that's copyright over here. Then you've got the record contract, excuse me, the record deal that she has with, with her label. And so in that contract, there will be a provision that allows her to re-record her album, right? Re-record the songs on that record after a certain period of time, way down the road, right? And labels started putting that provision into agreements about 60 years ago when the Everly Brothers decided to leave their label and re-record with Warner Brothers a best of the Everly Brothers. And so that's sort of like setting the table. So these kinds of provisions, right, the re-recording option, they're in a lot of contracts. This is not new, right? Like I said, this has been sort of happening for the last 60 years. But if we look at the people that might be put in sort of like the category of Taylor Swift, which is a very small category because she is such an extraordinary generational kind of talent, right? But if you look at, like, say, a Madonna or a Michael Jackson or somebody like that, right? Those folks may have also had re-recording provisions in their record contracts, but let's unpack what I just said, right? So let's say Madonna wants to go re-record, the Like a Virgin record or something like that, right? She didn't write the song. I don't believe she did, at least, as she didn't write a lot of her songs, a lot of her hits. But if she didn't write it, she doesn't have the musical composition. So even if she wants to go re-record, she would have to go get the license or some consents from the folks who own the composition, right? So that's like, yeah, you could do it, right? But you need gobs and gobs of money, and you kind of have to have a good reason as to why you'd want to do that, because you'd essentially be paying for the album just twice, right? So Taylor Swift is in a unique situation because here she is, somebody who has a fan base rabid enough to want her to have sort of ownership of everything, ownership and control of everything. You've got a songwriter who controls the musical composition. So the minute that she has the opportunity to re-record the sound recording, she's got both parts. And so she can go ahead and do it. And then when she does it, she then owns all the copyright, right? So it's like now she can kind of do whatever she wants with it, you know, apparel and sync rights for movies and commercials and licensing and all this stuff, right? So, and listen, there's plenty of other bands and things that could do these things, right? I mean, like, there are plenty of songwriters out there, but of course, doing it when you're Taylor Swift just has a much larger impact, because as you guys have probably seen now, everybody, you know, the real fans, so to speak, when they open up their Spotify app or whatever, like, they're clicking on Taylor's version because they want her to get the streaming royalties, not the old label who has since has actually sold the rights a couple of times. But so that, does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I appreciate you putting it in layman's terms.
For sure. And Greg, let me tell you, if a lawyer ever does tell you something and it's too technical and it's not in layman's terms, right, that's on them, because the law should not be inaccessible, right? So we should be explaining things in really plain terms so that anybody can understand.
100%.
Yeah.
Quick aside. This is a parenthetical aside, because I know a lot of Taylor Swift fans, and many of them are men. Many of them are my age even. Everybody seems to love Taylor Swift. Are you a Taylor Swift fan?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I think if you ask my kids and my wife, that they tell you that I do listen to Taylor Swift, and we all do, kind of. My path to her is probably maybe a little bit different than some others. I mean, I'm a big music fan. I've just been listening and playing music, you know, most of my life. And I think when I heard, I obviously knew who she was, you know, 15, 16 years ago, probably when everybody else started hearing about her as sort of a country songwriter, pop performer. But, you know, when 1989 came out, I really liked that record. I thought it was very hooky, catchy. I thought that the incorporation of a lot of the synthesizers and things reminded me a lot of bands I love, like New Order, Public Image, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, after she put it out, another songwriter, you know, who since has sort of had some a bunch of just problems from a PR standpoint with some of his conduct, but Ryan Adams, who did a cover version of that record, is another songwriter, all country songwriter who I liked. So I feel like at the time I was really vibing on 1989, and then I also listened to the cover album a bunch, and so all of a sudden I was like, wow, these are just really great songs, whether they're put to a like really highly produced kind of Max Martin sort of, you know, production quality, or even stripped down with just a almost country songwriter like Ryan Adams singing these songs with an acoustic guitar. It still sounded good. And you guys know as well as I do that when a song is really well written, it kind of doesn't matter how it's produced. It's going to sound good cross genre. You could probably do a reggae version of 1989 and probably start sound great, you know? So
good idea.
Yeah. So then after that, you know, I would say over the last 5 years, like our 6 years, you know, I obviously got through her catalog. And then I think when the pandemic hit and Folklore and Evermore dropped, I thought those were two really strong albums. And so just kind of put together, I guess. Yeah, I guess I am a fan.
Well, we happen to be recording this with you on the day that the 2024 Grammy nominations came out. And needless to say, Taylor Swift is a multiple nominee once again. She always is. What is it about her specific case that set any sort of a precedent? Because I know the legal law is so much about precedent. You mentioned this isn't particularly new in that the Everly Brothers did this a couple of generations earlier. What is it about how Taylor Swift has done this that is either precedent setting or different than previously done?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can answer this like a few different ways. So I don't think it's necessarily that like what she has, like that the cases themselves have become landmark cases necessarily. Although I do think that, you know, the two Shake It Off lawsuits that she defended, I think are often cited for cases where plaintiffs are trying to bring copyright claims for lyrics that are essentially common phrases in pop culture. And so that is sort of like one thing that those cases are sort of known for. But I think the reason I thought this would be interesting and why she is a good example of a lot of this IP stuff is I think it kind of goes hand in hand, Greg, with like how she is in sort of the music industry, right? So she's obviously this, like we were talking about, right? Big generational kind of talent. And I think that extends beyond her music and then into the business and into the law of music, right? And so by that, I mean, you know, here's somebody who has just done so much that she's had copyright lawsuits, trademark lawsuits, has had all kinds of trademark prosecution issues, like trying to get trademark registrations for lyrics and things like that. She's had paparazzi issues. She's had the re-recording. She had her music on and off of Spotify, sort of making a statement, right? And so I think, you know, in music, you may see this as Taylor Swift, and in contemporary art, there are artists like Daniel Arsham, who, you know, also sort of is just a generational talent, but because of the sort of multifaceted work, like, you know, for Taylor, it's crossing over genres, it's building this huge audience. I think for Daniel in contemporary art, it's like this riding the line between fine art and commercial art. I think in fashion, you can look at a lot at what like a lot of the LVMH brands have done, you know, or even Off-White with Virgil Abloh. These people who are just sort of like these polymath kind of creatives who are doing so many things also find themselves encountering a wide variety of intellectual property issues because they're creating so much in sort of a novel way. And then as a result, taking that IP and also then commercializing it in very sort of new and interesting ways, right? So all of that is why you get these kinds of people who have experienced sort of an unusual amount of, I guess, issues in the IP arena. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. What's the oddest interaction like with Swifties that you've had since creating this course, or like requests like this? Like, what's that one where you're just like, wow, this I put her name in a course and now this person's reaching out to me?
Oh, man, there's been so many, but I'm just going to tell you the most recent one, which probably happened a couple of hours ago, is I got an email from somebody in the Caribbean who she is an undergraduate student and she's thinking about the law. And she asked me how much she could pay and what she has to do to be able to audit this class, through the years in Miami. We've gotten so many audit requests. We've gotten, all these kinds of things. I've gotten a bunch of DMs on Instagram and things of people like thinking maybe I was her lawyer or that I was sort of connected to her some way, which I'm not. But I got to tell you though, it's sort of like been a very interesting journey, putting the class together, doing the research and then presenting the class and now seeing sort of some media attention to the class, because I think it just underscores, Chris, like how I personally believe, and I really do believe this, and this is somebody who's been, like you guys, I've been listening to a wide variety of music the last 30 or 40 years. I just don't think we've seen anything like this. And I think the reason is because if we look at those folks I mentioned before, and you can add some others, right? Like a Paul McCartney, Madonna, Michael Jackson, like a Bob Dylan, Dolly Parton, all of these, but Beyonce, Kanye West, even, right? All these people, right? I think it is due to her masterful navigation of internet culture, right? Because in addition to the superstardom that she has, which, this small cadre of other musicians have, they're able to get hundreds of millions or billions of streams. They're able to sell out stadiums. They're able to sell merch. They're able to be Super Bowl, Saturday Night Live, like all the big stuff, right? That we've got other people who've done those things. But I don't think we've ever seen anyone do all of those things squarely in the internet age with such sort of the ability to sort of strategize and navigate the new sort of digital world that we are all now sort of living in.
Yeah, she's obviously a brilliant businesswoman. I think I just read that she's a billionaire now, that she's over that threshold. And it's just incredible what she's been able to do. Can you take a wild guess how large her legal team must be?
Well, I don't even know if it's how large, right? It's probably just if I had to guess, I bet you the core team is probably just a small handful of folks who, are specialized in various areas and maybe one or two people who are just kind of looking out for everything. But I bet you it is people who are close to her, connected with her, and who have probably been with her for a very long time. In fact, when I saw the Eras Tour film, and I did see it, and I think I saw it the first week it came out.
Same.
All right. I think a couple things that really came through in that film is, I think you see some of the musicians on the stage with her have been with her since the Nashville days, right? I think if you read about her management, a lot of it is new and evolved, but I think some of those folks have been around a very long time. And I think anytime you see a creative, whether it's in, art or fashion or film or music or whatever, I have found just my personal anecdotal experiences, I think in working with these kinds of people who have achieved a great deal of success, it oftentimes is because they have, strong family unit or strong management team. Not that it's like a management team that's like all gone to Ivy League schools and have lots of degrees and things, but just people who have been with her and know her and understand her for a long time. And I think that that's important, especially for a performer who started when she was so young.
You mentioned not having any association with her, but I am curious, when you put her name in a course, do you get any contacts from her camp? Do you need any permission? Can you name a course after anyone?
You can. And that is really due to the U.S. Copyright Act.
Okay.
Under the Copyright Act, there is this doctrine and a concept called fair use. And fair use is the concept that you can actually use other people's intellectual property for certain purposes. The most common one that, you guys know about, it happens every Saturday night at on NBC, which is Saturday Night Live, right? So on Saturday Night Live, you'll see trademarks, copyright, and all kinds of things for an hour and a half every week. And that's because of fair use, because fair use allows parody and satire to exist, and you can use third-party IP for that. In this instance, my class is not a parody, it's not a satire, but it is it's teaching, right? So it's academic, and so there are additional carve-outs for news reporting, journalism, and also for academia, right? So that's why, when I was a sophomore at the University of Wisconsin in Madison back in the late 90s, they released a course all on the Beatles, which I took. which I thought was amazing. And, you know, that course, like mine, was, you know, filled with Beatles IP that the professor was able to freely use.
So no contact from her people, like you.
No contact. You know, I get hit up by some of the fan clubs, fan accounts and things.
But her official team has not been like, hey, what are you teaching in this course?
Not from the official team, no.
Well, because of the immense popularity of Swifties, TV ratings for Chiefs games have gone through the roof. Just
yeah, I know. Crazy.
It's crazy. It's insane. And I'm wondering if you, I'm speaking off the top of my head here, but if you broadcast intellectual property law through the lens of Taylor Swift, if you broadcast each of your classes on YouTube, you would have 2 or 3 million built-in live viewers.
And I'm telling you, the Greg Cody Show is prepared to go into business with you. We have a YouTube channel. Like, we can team up if like you're ready for
this.
We
will host that if you decide to broadcast your course live. I'm half kidding and half serious here. I don't know the legality of that, whether UM would go along with it.
No, well, listen, I mean, you know, we I don't know if UM will go along with it, but I think you really are hitting on something, Greg, which is that, like, you know, there was just an article the other day in The Fashion Law, which is a really good sort of publication for IP in the sort of like creative spaces. And
Sounds like a real light read.
Yeah. And it's cool. And it's like, what they were talking about there is just the current, just insatiable appetite that the brands have right now to just be anywhere in the orbit of Taylor Swift. Right. And if you just look, I mean, she doesn't do a whole lot of brand collaborations and commercials and things like that. So I think that has almost created an even bigger appetite. I mean, it has been a very interesting experience to just see how anything with her name attached to it in any way, even something as what I would consider like as sort of banal as like a law school course, tends to get so much attention. It's almost like the public and the media, they're just pining for like any tidbit they can get on Taylor Swift.
Yeah. I have a follow up. Can you talk about the demand on that note? How fast did this class sell out, book up as opposed to other classes? Like, is it the same with even these classes? Are you seeing, like, is there a waiting list for this class and like none other?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've been teaching 8 years and, you know, most of the classes will fill up and some, you know, like the AI course I taught last semester, which is also very popular, like fill up quickly. This one filled up immediately and has like a, you know, waitlist like as long as US1, you know.
And is it something where like after the first class you kind of just get into the nuts and bolts and they're looking around like, I thought this was going to be more about Taylor? Or is it like, or are you harping on her specifically every class? Or is it just kind of like, this is what she did, so let me teach you about this, and you don't actually mention Taylor that often?
No, it's the opposite. Listen, like, I know what the audience wants.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And so
you're putting lyrics. How often are you dropping lyrics into your lesson?
And we're listening to music every single class. Like, she's mentioned on every slide because every single subject is about something for like direct, like her career. Right. And I say that kind of jokingly, Greg, but I mean it. Right. Like, we want to get the students' attention. We want them engaged because when they get excited, you know, when they walk into class and I just have Taylor Swift music playing, it puts them in a specific frame of mind. Yeah. When we start going through the courses, like, let me give you an example in copyright class in law school, right? The sort of one of the seminal cases, which teaches you that you can't copyright ideas, comes from this, or copyright facts, comes from this case called Feist, which is all about like yellow pages, like the phone book. Okay. Guess how many of my students even know what a phone book is, right? Zero. So guess how many of them
amazing
know what Taylor Swift song is? All of them. So is it easier to learn this material through some archaic book that used to list people's phone numbers, or through like songs and stories that they are very, very, very familiar with, right? So that's the idea, is sort of that, which is to bring this material to life in a way, in a context that they not only understand, but then will have the capacity to apply more effectively than, you know, maybe what is otherwise usually offered.
I'm trying to think of what songs you play each day, and I'm imagining like on when exam grades are, it's, you know, Shake It Off maybe because in case you didn't do well, or like on test day maybe it's Bad Blood just because it's like an intense song. like how do you, like, are we doing this, like what are we doing on the first day of class, like what's the song we come out of the gate with?
So like, you know, I told you I'm a 1989 fan. So usually the music that they have playing when they come in is like something off of 1989.
Okay. Bad Blood, I think, is on there. Yeah.
But the first class was mainly Shake It Off, which we listened to once, because we also then listened to the Jesse Bram song, which was the basis of his lawsuit against her. Okay. The second class, we were listening to Out of the Woods when they walked into the room. But then
there we go.
I think we listened again to Shake It Off, and we listened to the 3LW song, which, you know, they sued her for that. And listen, like even some of the judges' opinions in these cases, right, are the one dismissing the, I believe it's dismissing the Bram case initially, or it was the 3LW case. I think it was the Bram case. The whole conclusion to the opinion is just laced with Taylor lyrical references, right?
That's so wild.
That's the thing, right? It's just become just such a phenomenon culturally that like we're all just kind of on this train.
Vivek Jayaram from University of Miami Law School, adjunct professor. When you first started floating the idea of incorporating Taylor Swift into the name of a course you're going to teach, what initial reaction did you get, either from family, from friends, from colleagues? Was anyone scoffing and assuming you weren't serious, or was everybody like way on board?
I'm sure a lot of people were. I think some people were. I'd say there's three camps, right? There's the camp people who are like, Taylor Swift, you know, she's just a teeny bop kind of, you know, pop star kind of thing. And then when you start explaining, most of those people will be like, yeah, I really like her too, right? Right, that's the first camp. Second camp would be, I think, like the administration and the faculty and things at UM, right? I think when this program first launched back in 2016, you know, I think I had some conversations with people to be like, listen, we're going to really try to like push the boundaries here and really get the students excited about some of the courses they're going to have. And they're going to be a little bit sort of off the wall or whatever. And I got to tell you, the university has been extremely supportive, open, and this program and Greg Levy's particularly have done such a great job of really bringing sort of contemporary issues into the law school in a way that you just don't typically see. And I think we are now already starting to see the 8 or 9 years that this program has been around, the impact that it has had and the opportunities that it has opened for the students when they get out there in the real world. So I have to say the UM has been extremely supportive. And then, you know, there's like the group of like my lawyer friends, like law school friends and colleagues at work and things like that, who were like, oh, Taylor Swift. Oh, that makes sense. Right. Because when you think about it, you're like, well, yeah, here's somebody who has been a part of so many interesting IP issues over the last 10 or 15 years. Why couldn't you teach a course on it? So, and this doesn't mean that she's the only person you could teach a course on. There's several, but I do think that hers is particularly relevant. I mean, even while we're teaching the class, right, this Eras film comes out and she kind of breaks all the rules of like film licensing in the middle of the strike and goes directly to the theaters and like, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know. It's just like, it just keeps going, you know, in that direction.
Here's a suggestion I have is to put Taylor's name in the course that you're struggling to fill up the most. And then just like, you know, play a song when they walk in every day and, you know, just teach your course. But I bet you totally. We will see a bump in those classes as well. So
100%. I mean, you know, we could just maybe next semester, you know, maybe we'll say we'll teach, maybe we'll just be Barbie. Maybe we'll do Barbie.
Yes. There we go. There we go.
we're going to let you go, but I want to.
Maybe the Greg Cody show. Maybe the Greg Cody show.
Sure. Yeah. Intellectual property law through the lens of Greg Cody. I just don't think that would have the same.
I don't know.
Appeal.
I don't know. Campus.
Let's test it.
But you know what? Taylor Swift, and I think this is part of the reason why she's so immensely popular is that despite that popularity, there's a mystique about her. Her brand management is brilliant. And I don't know how, I suspect that's very calculated, but I've seen more TV commercials with Deion Sanders in the last 3 months than I've ever seen with Taylor Swift. She's very mindful of how she manages her career, and part of that is
when you make $100 million a tour or whatever she made. I don't even know, probably more than that. But like, it's just, you don't need to do the commercials, Dad.
No, I know, but some would anyway, though.
Yeah, you know, but I hear you, Greg, because what she's done a really great job of is she's in the zeitgeist. She's part of the conversation all the time. But you're right. She's not like in your face. She's not popping up on your feed in really like sort of, you know, like ways that, you know, seem sort of like forced or anything like that.
Right.
It seems casual, but we know that it's obviously curated and it just seems natural. And yeah, I mean, it's wild. It's almost, it does remind me in many ways of, you know, for obvious reasons, and I'm not obviously not the first person to make this analogy, but it is a little Dolly Parton-ish, which is like, she's just kind of become, you know, like the kind of icon that all kinds of people support, which I think is kind of.
Do you think her and Travis will make it?
No, but I to Greg's point, I think, you know, listen, the most popular person in the NFL this year is Taylor Swift. So she's
right.
Definitely done a pretty good job of like going from country and then moving over, getting all like the mainstream and then the indie rock and then like the hip hop and the main, you know, and now she's deciding to also gobble up the NFL audience too. And so I personally believe that I'm not saying that that's like the only reason or that's why she's, you know, dating Travis Kelce, but maybe it lasts forever. Who knows? But
right.
Well, we're trying to test that theory with putting a big headline of Taylor Swift class professor in this episode. So we're going to test this theory.
Awesome. Let's see.
If this is by far our most downloaded episode of the year, thank you. Can we thank you? Well, let us welcome. Thank you beforehand. So
you're welcome.
Yes. And in all seriousness, congrats for tapping into the popularity of Taylor Swift in a way that's absolutely legitimate and directly related to law. It's a great inspiration by you, and I'm glad it's worked out with a full class.
Oh, thank you so much, Greg. It's been great to be here. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Enjoyed it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And now a poem about Sheets and Giggles by Yeti Blanc. Ah, Sheets and Giggles, a company with care. For this planet, for cool sheets, and for the Greg Cote Show. See what I did there? Love of Earth and holidays convene to birth the year's biggest sales now through November 17. Yes, Green Friday brings a sheetload of deals, like up to 50% off. That sounds like a steal. Then add 10% off with promo code GREEN at sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. Please, help us feel seen. Support our friends who support this show and quality rest. With cooling sheets, mattresses, and pillows, they're simply the best. Green Friday deals can boost your sleep habitat. Then you can use the money you save to buy a nice hat. So go to sheetsgiggles.com/Greg, code GREEN. Huge discounts and commitments to keep our earth clean. The end. Support the Greg Cote Show by supporting our friends at Sheets and Giggles. And now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Dad, after that interview, I really need you to just tease this week's episode of The Lebatard Show because I don't want to get to Three Facts Jack.
Okay, so you're just delaying the inevitable with Three Facts Jack.
Right.
Okay, something is happening on Tuesday's Lebatard Show. I'm in there. Ron McGill is going to be in the studio doing his Tuesday Ron Hell McGill bit. And it concerns our new book that's coming out, The Pride of a Lion, which drops December 5th.
A big announcement about your book?
It's a book-related big event that people will want to listen to. I don't want to give it away because that would be a disservice to the Levitard show, because they're billing it as sort of a surprise, I think.
But if you're into the Ron McGill and Greg Cody book, you want to be tuned in this Tuesday.
Correct.
Look at us.
I can say that with very good intention and a straight face.
What a pro tease.
Thank you. Pro tease.
So the book.
The book.
You're going to studio, though.
I have no idea. I mean, even if that was the big surprise, I certainly wouldn't be the one to reveal that.
Yeti, I want you to bleep out what I just did just to like tease the audience. But I like the idea that I just said exactly what's happening on Tuesday and my dad's trying to smile it off like I didn't just ruin it.
You know, I mean, if you want to ruin it, go ahead. I wasn't going to, but
I was hoping you'd honestly get more mad at me. That would have been a better podcast moment if like you were
just called him an asshole and
genuinely upset.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I did that.
Well. Hey, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I guess we're just all going to peter out the whole episode.
No, I'm not petering out. I'm petering in. Oh, whoa. That's what I'm doing.
Baby.
Right on.
Where's my three facts, Jack, intro music?
Just hit it.
There are three things that interest him, so sit right back for three facts, Jack.
Number three. Neil Diamond's iconic 1969 hit Sweet Caroline was written in honor of his then-wife, Marcia. But fans in stadiums singing Sweet Marcia would not have sounded right. He needed a three-syllable name, recalled a photo of a young Caroline Kennedy riding a horse, and Sweet Caroline was born.
I feel like we're in repeats. You said something like that very recently.
Yeah. I want to research that, because if that's a fact, Jack, if that was something I've already done,
we're going to have to suspend this.
I want
too.
To plead guilty publicly. And if that was not something I've already done, then Yeti will apologize publicly.
Okay.
Is that fair?
But like that, like the worst punishment you could do to Yeti, if that is something he did wrong, is make him go back and listen to all the three facts, Jacks.
Okay. Then there you go.
Either like, way,
he has to do that.
If Yeti ends up to be right, you're going to have to go back and do a punishment because of what you made him do in listening to all the three facts.
Okay, well, let's get to the bottom of this, because if I have repeated myself, which I try never to do on Three Facts Jack, I deserve to be called out.
So you are going to make Yeti listen to all the Three Facts Jack.
Well, he's the one who accused
me. I'm just going to do it because I won't be able to go to sleep tonight wondering about it.
Okay, I have been accused of self-plagiarism by Yeti Blanc, and we're going to get to the bottom of this.
I think we should just go with our audience's recollection and just put out a poll. Has Greg Cody used that fact before?
Oh, Rage will be faster to it than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I want to find out for sure. Okay, let's move on. Number two, the original U.S. naval armament consisted of a six-vessel fleet, one of those ships, and one only, that launched from Boston Harbor on October 21st, 1797. The USS Constitution remains in service as the oldest commissioned warship still afloat, called Old Ironsides. It is presently grounded for mast repairs, but remains on active, if largely symbolic, duty at 226 years old.
Nice.
3 years younger than Greg Cody.
Number one, the human eye typically measures about an inch across by adulthood. Ever wonder what's the largest eye in the animal kingdom? It belongs to the colossal squid, whose eye has been measured at 11 inches wide. That's right. An eye that's nearly a foot.
Right on.
There you go.
Really missed that segment.
Well, I did not do. I have not repeated the colossal squid fact. I can tell you that.
What I love about Chris's disdain for Three Facts Jack is he's the one who coined it. Chris, yeah. You spawned the idea.
I know.
Made me go make some imaging inspired me to make imaging. And here we are.
I guess I can't complain about those. The first one was old.
And he's also, Christopher, is the guy who suspended dad jokes, which are off suspension and will return on the episode we do closest to Thanksgiving, which I believe will be the following week.
Nothing I've ever done has gotten more praise than that.
suspending dad jokes.
I've gotten so many texts and letters. People have written handwritten letters.
Yeah, sure.
Some guy sent me his baby. He's like, "You can have my baby since you did that."
Brace yourselves, everyone, because next week dad jokes are back.
Right. Have the big reveal on whether or not I repeated myself on dad joke or in Three Facts Jack number 3 this week, the Neil Diamond bit.
True. So to ease things, though, for everyone who isn't a fan of dad jokes, we're going to do, there will be a, we've got sales all month.
We're on sale, baby.
On sale. This week, just today, starting the 13th. When you're listening to this, there's 20% off everything at shop.thegregcodyshow.com. The 13th through the 17th. So that's Monday through Friday. And on Black Friday, 30% off everything.
Nice.
That's Whoa. Our biggest sale of the year, folks.
Biggest sale of the year. 30% off. Get yourself a nice hat. Buy your friend a nice hat.
We have new color combos that I saw that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
how about that?
Good stuff.
Make sure we hit there. Hey, Florida State beat Miami. Woohoo! Oops.
Christopher, what are your thoughts on that game?
My thoughts are that it was a very meaningful game for Florida State, not a very meaningful game for Miami. So that actually made me feel like Miami had a chance. They were out of it, back in it. Classic Miami, kind of teasing you, making you think they have a chance, and then just taking a big fart at the end.
Yeah. I wrote a remarkably positive column on the fight UM showed and how good that young quarterback looked until he got hurt at the end.
How's the column going over?
Emery Williams. It's doing pretty well. Thanks. It's my biggest selling column so far this month has been the one where I said Jim Harbaugh, his suspension is not enough and they should bar Michigan from competing in the college football playoff.
Yeah, let's punish those kids for what he did.
Kids. Yeah, that's correct. Let's punish those kids. That's right. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the only way you make a statement that matters is if you punish the school to the tune of costing it money.
If you're coaching a little league soccer team and you get a DUI on the way to the field, the team season should be forfeited.
Yeah, good analogy by you. Okay. Listen, we're going to wrap up this podcast now. We're wrapping it up like a Christmas gift. Okay. How about that?
Good.
Just like the gift you're going to wrap when you buy a nice hat, t-shirt from the Greg Cody merch store. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you, Vivek Jayaram, seriously, from UM Law School for joining us to talk about why Taylor Swift is relevant in a law class. And very interesting convo, I thought. So thanks a lot, that kind of thing, and we'll see you all next week.
Dad, take us out with a Taylor Swift jam.
I couldn't begin to hum one, let alone know one.
Really?
Yeah. I can sing a little bit from Rubber Band Man by the Spinners if you want.
Shake it off. Shake it off.
Okay. Shake it off. Shake it off.
I don't know about shake you. It up, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling
okay.
Someday I'll be living in the big old city and all you're ever gonna be is me. Yeah, someday I'll be thinking it and all you're ever gonna be is me. Why you gotta be so mean?
That's not bad. That's a pretty good song.
Good night, everyone.
All right, likewise, that kind of thing. See ya.